And now, for the rest of the story. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. The thought for today. And now, for the rest of the story. Remember that, Dodie? There's a radio commentator. He's still living. You remember his name?
Harvey?
Yeah, Harvey. Remember his first name? I think it's Len Harvey or something like that. And he would give a series of talks on the radio every week, in fact. And his talks on the radio were, and now for the rest of the story. He would give the news, and he gave the news quite charmingly, and then he would give a story, and he'd tell a story about whatever it may be, and he would tell the story so delightfully and so wonderfully that people wanted to know more about it, and he'd then tell them the rest of the story. But what his force of fame was that he would refer to a story that was current news, and he would tell about the people who were in the news, for instance, MacArthur, that he and President Truman had an out, and he would say, you know the story about President Truman and General MacArthur. He said, but now I would like to give you the rest of the story. And here is the rest of the story. And then he would go into the story and he would say, General MacArthur was an outstanding general, or is an outstanding general, and his great tour de force was that he was able to do things that were just on the edge of approval by the government, to bring peace about in the Philippines, to bring peace about many areas where he would take his ships and he would conquer the Japanese, and he would bring them down. And then when he went to Japan, and he was made the governor of Japan while it was being rehabilitated, he did a most outstanding job. He took an entire nation of Japan, a defeated nation, and brought them back to their feet and gave them a sense of dignity and a sense of worth and value so that they would be a useful and a balanced nation. He made sure that they had schooling, and he made sure many other things. And then when he went to Korea and he went to this circumstances, and he felt that he should go in and mop him up, clean him up. And was it the Vietnamese or the Korean War, one or the other? But he went in there and he wanted to do a complete job. And President Truman said, no, you can only go so far, because we have no authority to go further. We do not want an all-out war over there. We do not want to do this. We just want to have a containment. And General MacArthur was not an officer for containment. He was an officer for fulfillment. He wanted to win the battle or lose it. Win the battle was the only thing he had in his mind. And so he told the president that he had intended to win the battle. And the president said, no, you are only to contain them. This is part of the United Nations operation that we are part of. This is part of our involvement there. We are only a containment. We are not going in to... Actually, if he had gone in and won the battle, then the problems we're now having with North and South Korea would not be the same anymore, or wherever it is. And Harvey wanted to give the rest of the story, to show that the general was not just all bad, but he was going in for a definite purpose. And if he had done it, it would have been good. But Truman had his advisors, and his advisors and his own judgment were that it was only a containment. But MacArthur, who worked for Truman, was his supervisor in the field of the military, felt that he knew better. And so he told his boss, Mr. Truman, "I'm going in for the full thing." And Mr. Truman said, "You are not. I am the commander-in-chief of the army. You are not the commander-in-chief of the army. You are a supervisor. You are a general under me doing this, and you will not do that." And MacArthur says, "But I must. It must be done. I'm going to do it." And so he was recalled. And the nation worshipped MacArthur because he was indeed a great general, having done great, great, wonderful things. And to have him dethroned at the peak of his power was a very trying thing for the nation and MacArthur himself, because MacArthur was in line to be running for president. He was in line for this high office, but he would have made a very poor president, because he would go in where angels fear to tread, and he would lack the diplomacy, and he would lack the ability to do certain things that a president has to do according to what he did with President Truman. But as Mr. Harvey would say, and now the rest of the story. For you and I, we are worshipers of the appearances. We're the worshipers of the evidence of life. And it's a very unfortunate thing that we're the worshipers of the evidence of life, because we would approve of things that General MacArthur did, because he is such an outstanding, dynamic, forceful man. And Truman was a rather laid-back man, but yet very definite. And Truman was one of our outstanding presidents as far as being a president of the home front. And he was well recognized and well appreciated for what he did, but he was never fully appreciated for what he did, because he always played a very laid-back role, where Roosevelt was out front, Truman was out back. And Truman did not make a very forceful appearance, but he was a very forceful president. He said, like no other president had ever said, he said, "The buck stops here, at me. I have to make the final decision. I have to be the one who says yes or no, even with my advisors saying yes or no or whatever." So, because you and I are such worshipers of appearance, we would have gone along with MacArthur, and we would have said, "Hey, you're right, you know, what you are doing is right." But what he was doing was dead wrong. He did not appreciate his supervisor, his boss. He did not appreciate Mr. Truman and his word that he was the one who gave the orders, not the generals in the field. If the generals in the field give the order, then why have an overseeing general who's in charge of that? Or why have the chief of the army, the president of the United States, have a position over them all? And why send them at all? Now, we say that Bush wants to start a war, and he wants to send our nation into war. And we said that Kennedy wanted to do this, and we said that others equally wanted to do this, Kennedy with the Bay of Pigs down in Cuba and so forth. But we only know a part of the story. And part of the story is for the presidents or whoever to get the people enthused on their behalf to whatever they want to do. And we, as divine beings, cannot allow ourselves ever to be concerned about what the appearances are. We can only allow ourselves to be concerned about what is the background, what is the underlying cause that was put in motion, and what underlying effect is going to follow from it. And if at any time we lie to save face, we lie to achieve a goal, we lie to do anything, it's wrong. It's wrong. You say, "Well, Herb, sometimes you got to tell the white lies. You got to do." You never have to do that. You think you do, but the moment you start telling lies in one area, and get away with it, you're going to expand that to other areas. And the moment you start trying to get your own way by telling lies, you try to get your own way by telling things that are supportive of what you're doing, whereas they're really not true, pretty soon you're going to be doing this in all areas. Because if you make it a habit always to tell the truth, and you are known for telling the truth, you will always be believed. But if you make it a habit of little lies, of being diplomatic and being, giving in on certain issues, you'll never be believed. It's like the woman that you say to her, "Would you have sex with me?" And she says, "No." "Well, here's $100. "No." "Here's $1,000. "No." "Here's $1,000,000. "Well, maybe." "Well, what difference does it make whether the stakes are $1 or $1,000,000? If you have integrity, you cannot be bought. You cannot be bought. Could you have a gun put to your head and try to get you to do things that were really of no great consequence? No great consequence to you or the world. Could you be forced to do something? And if you can, then you have no personal integrity. You have nothing that you can depend on or anybody else can depend on. But if under all circumstances you stand up for the truth, under all circumstances you stand up and you say the truth, then you will always be respected by yourself. And if you believe in yourself, that's all that matters. If you're dead and you believe in yourself, that's all that it matters. If you're alive and you believe in yourself, that's all that it matters. And do you have to die to believe in yourself? No. No. You just stand up for who you are. And if General MacArthur had listened to the president, if he had just said, "Okay, Mr. Truman, I don't agree with you, but you're the boss, and I will do it your way," he would have been the greatest military leader of the world. And he would have subsequently gone in to be the president. Subsequently, he would go in to be one of the greatest statesmen of the world. But that little point, it's a major point, of following the rules of your superior, officer, the one in charge of you, that one little point, it makes it so difficult for all of us. But when you hear the rest of the story, and you hear the rest of the story as rather quixotic, rather maudlin, you hear the story as sort of a humanistic point of view, sort of approving what was done, and when it was done, it was incorrect, you sort of go along with the appearances. Never go along with the appearances. Never. During the 30s and the 40s, bank robbers were quite popular. And they were played up in the press and played up in the radio and played up on the movies. And they were made to be heroes. Cowboys and Indians were made to be heroes. People in strife and conflict were made to be heroes, and much of the American history was made up on these false heroes. And then we wonder where our values are. We wonder where the integrity of a nation is when the type of heroes that we worship are the heroes of crime. America is a great nation. It's a wonderful nation. But MacArthur was a great man and a wonderful man, but if he had believed in his employer, his boss, he would have been the greatest. America is a wonderful nation and a wonderful program for the world to follow. We have our foundation in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, which are the most excellent documents anywhere in the world on democracy. And yet, we were teaching our people to worship crime. to worship the Dillingers and to worship those who robbed banks and to worship the cowboys who were out shooting up the Indians. And in the cowboy and Indian shows, you never see anybody getting killed. It's very interesting. They at least had that much integrity about them. But that's the story of the Old West. That's the story of the history of the United States and the history of the world. Yes, that is in part the story. But what is the greatest story of the history of the United States? The greatest story are the doctors who went out on the plains, who worked with the people who wanted to live in their pioneer families. The judge who sat in honor of the court laws and the rules that were guiding the people, that were the frontier rules that were the foundation of our country on the western plains and the pioneer areas, as well as in the cities and of the East Coast. It was the merchants who believed in the people and brought merchandise to sell to them. It was the people themselves, who the mothers and the fathers said, "We will have a school, we will have a church. The first building to be built in this town will be a church." And they weren't all of the same faith, but they believed in the worship of God. They believed in the education of their children. And these are the unsung heroes. These are the unsung beings of our American history that have made America great. Yes, Europe has theirs in a similar vein, but America is what we're talking about right now. We're not comparing it to any other nation. We're just saying, for America to be great, it must have values, morals, it must have things that they placed before it, an integrity that is unimpeachable, whether for a dollar or a million. It's an unimpeachable integrity. And you, what is the rest of your story? Is the rest of your story saying that you want to be a spiritual master? You want to walk the spiritual path? You want to express your divinity? You make me laugh. You make me laugh. I stand there and I see you argue with one another. I see you argue with me. I see you not listening to me when I tell you, go do this. And you treat me just as though I were another human being standing with you. And I am your sharer. I am teaching you this philosophy. I am giving you the sound basis for this philosophy. And it's up to you to immediately jump upon it and say, yes, sir, and go for it. I don't need you to say yes, sir. You need to say it. I don't need any praise from any of you. If I needed praise, I'd go work at a job where I would be a supervisor who gets praise and a good salary, good paycheck. But that's not what this is all about. This is all about our spiritual path, where we are learning self-confidence. We are learning self-diligence. We are learning self-determination. We are learning to listen within, self-awareness in every possible way. We are learning to be untouched by the things that are going on around us. Get your nose out of other people's business. All of you. All of you. You too, Dodie. All of you. You have a tendency to put your nose in other people's business. Keep your nose in your own business. What is it that you are doing? What is it that you're working on? What is it that's important to you? I say to Ellen, Ellen, go and tell Sylvia this. Well, I said, Sylvia didn't do anything wrong. She did everything perfect. I said, Ellen, go tell Sylvia this. So Ellen goes, Herb said this. My God, Ellen, this was your opportunity to stand up for yourself as the boss. Go and tell her these things. But she didn't do anything wrong. I didn't say she did something wrong. I said she did something right. Now, when you talked to Brian today, our handyman, did you say, Herb wants you to do some work in the Hermitage? Or did you say, Brian, I have some work for you to do in the Hermitage. Herb will explain it to you. Or did you say, Herb wants you to do some work in the Hermitage? You see, that's a total different. You see, if you're the boss, you want him to do the work. Herb will explain it to him because Herb knows what he wants. But you are the boss. And Sylvia, when I say to you, Sylvia, tell Brian that I'd like to have him take out these last pieces of fence and this and that. And do you go to him, and I know you do, do you go to him and do you say, Brian, Herb wants you to do this, and Herb wants you to do this, and Herb wants you to do that. If you do, you just demasculate yourself, and perhaps you'd like to. You just take away the power and authority of your authority as an abbot. You take away the power of your being a president. And this is a silly thing to do. Now, your integrity is worth so much. Stand up for yourself. I give you all of these opportunities because I have eyes in the back of my head. I see things that you'll never be able to see because you are looking too much at appearances. And Brian forgot to take down the 150-foot of fence because he was distracted by something else. And he never got back to it again. Nobody asked him to do it. And so I see these things, and they were stuck away in the bushes. You can't see too well. And there's some posts standing up there and a few other little things. I see all these things. I try not to mention too many things because it sounds like I'm picky. But I'm aware of these things because I am looking at the perfection of all these things. And if there's one stone standing in an improper place, I want to see that put proper. Now, it's not that we're going to do all these changes, not that we're going to make all these changes, but we're going to stand up for principle. Each one of you could be as great as MacArthur had the potential of being. But if you don't stand up for yourself, for your personal integrity, and if you don't stand up to represent what this monastery is and who, what role I'm playing here, then you will miss the boat. You'll miss the boat. And I don't want you to miss the boat, because it's a wonderful boat. So, and now the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that each one of you is making your last step in the awareness of your divinity. And as you make this last step, just claim it, enjoy it, and benefit yourself. And Sylvia, when I say that you have done something, don't instantly say, no, you didn't do it, because think of what I'm saying. I'm saying, you have done this, and I'm doing my darndest to make you irritated. I'm doing my darndest to make you feel that you have done something terrible and you have to immediately say, no, 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 no. Just say, thank you for telling me. Agree with your adversary quickly. And then, once you agree, and all of your objection is out of the way, all of your contrariness is out of the way, you will see a blessing that stands in there that you cannot see when you're objecting. I say, Inga, you are a young man. And Inga says, what's the matter with you? I'm a woman. I can't see. And if she would just say, yes, I'm a young man, immediately she would see what I'm saying. But as long as she's fighting me because I'm saying she's a young man, she will not see the blessing. And I would like each of you, as a little test, to have me say, you are a young man, each of the four of you. You're a young man.
You're a young man.
I don't want you to say it. I want to say to you, each of you, that you're a young man, and you say, yes. And say it with all of the properness that it entails. And then watch, as this day unfolds, what it means to you. You will find that there's a blessing in there that would not be apparent if you just instantly said, no way. So, go forth and find that blessing and have a ball.
Thank you.
And I love you.